is Captain Megan Nermal Burke. She has a bachelor's in mathematics from the Academy, a master's of science in mathematics from AFIT. She's cut her teeth in test in the bomber CTF, went to TPS, and is now currently at the 413th Flight Test Squadron doing UH-1 and CV-22 testing. So with no further ado, Nermal.
Thank you. Can everyone hear me okay? Okay, cool. So I'm going to talk about building a cadre of experts to test autonomous systems. All of this is publicly releasable. Here's the standard disclaimer for Air Force talk. And for our overview, we're going to start with the problem we're trying to solve with a cadre of autonomous test experts. I'm going to go through a bunch of definitions, and then we're going to roll into how a cadre might be able to solve the problem at hand, and then a way forward and future work. So first of all, the problem. How do we create an overarching methodology to test autonomous systems? I think throughout the day today, we've kind of touched on it a little bit in various talks. So it's pretty obvious that we've all are aware of why it's important. But just in case, Dr. Bornstein from the Army Research Lab testified to Congress several years ago now about the importance of acquiring autonomous and semi-autonomous systems to help improve lethality and to help protect soldiers. And that really scales across the DoD and isn't just an Army problem. In the NDS for 2018, we even have listed the importance of getting advanced autonomous systems to gain a military advantage. So we already have recognized as a community the importance of acquiring these autonomous systems, so naturally we need to figure out how to test them. And if that isn't enough motivation, these systems are already being built. So someone mentioned earlier the Loyal Wingman program from Boeing that is already being built and I think tested in Australia. And then another example of something currently being worked on is the optionally piloted vehicle at Sikorsky, an optionally piloted search and rescue helicopter. So not only do we recognize that we need to buy these things, industry has recognized that they already need to build them, and in fact, they're already building them. So now, before I go any further, I want to talk more about what does autonomy really mean. It's really hard to define, and there's going to be several definitions based on whoever you talk to. I'll start really basic with what it's not, and it is distinct from automation. So automation is something where you make a decision and you build a system to do that specific task. So think of your thermostat as an automatic system. You set your thermostat to control the temperature of a room to be exactly a specific temperature, and it actuates, either turns on your air conditioner or your furnace, to keep the room at the temperature that you, the human, specified. The thermometer, your thermostat is not making any decisions, it's just acting on the decisions you made. Autonomy on the extreme other end would be something like your driverless car or the other examples, where there's, for a car, you're not choosing the roads, you're not choosing the speed, you're not even choosing potentially the lane you're going to be in. You're completely hands off, and the machine is making decisions to complete the overall mission of getting you from point A to point B. So those are two very extremes for autonomy and automation, but it's really a spectrum. So here I have an image from the Society of Automotive Engineers. As a community, we're really moving away from levels of autonomy, but it's still valuable to talk about because it illustrates the fact that there is a gray area when it comes to what is automatic and what is autonomous. And really, there's a complete spectrum, and there's all sorts of flavors. Similar to how Colonel Choi talked about black boxes, white boxes, and there's the gray areas in between earlier today. So defining autonomy is not an easy task. One way that we can look at it that we can emphasize based on what we care about as far as testers is certain characteristics of autonomy. Here I have five listed that will make it more difficult to test an autonomous system than to test a traditional system. First, we have that it's fact-based. There's several sensors pulling in data from several data inputs from several sensors. So there's a ton of information your system is collecting. The next is it's acting in real time. This is not post-processing. It's acting on the information it has and potentially past information to make decisions or perform actions now. And the biggest component that makes it different than a lot of the things that we talked about earlier today about software testing is that it's cyber-physical. There is a physical component to this system where it's interacting with the real world in a tangible way. Complexity is very similar to how Colonel Choi talked about black boxes earlier. There might not be a good way for us to understand what the system is doing, or it could be that we can see what the system's doing, but it's extremely complex, high-dimensional, very large solution space, so it's really hard to understand, even if it's really easy to look at any individual component of what it's doing. And then lastly, though the wording might not be the best, it's self-aware, not in that it's a sentient system, but that it has information and understanding beyond the task it needs to perform. It has some sort of understanding either of the bigger mission or the task that other players in the space are doing. So before I shift to how we're going to test these autonomous systems, I'm going to talk a little bit about how we test things now. Now, this is a very broad generalization of how the Air Force test community is structured. We can kind of put people into three buckets, and they aren't necessarily completely isolated and distinct buckets. We have the test pilot school graduates, which I'm not going to belabor. And then we have a lot of really young talent, kind of similar to what Kevin was talking about. We have people we recruit straight out of college who have the most recency in the scientific or engineering techniques that we need to understand. And then the third, more kind of catch-all category is the gray beards, if you will, the people who have been in test for a while, who are either really smart on the system, maybe they're retired operators from the bigger, in this example, Air Force, or they have been doing flight tests for decades. So they're there for the continuity, either when it comes to the big picture of the system or the big picture of tests. And usually today, we as a team of those three types of people do traditional test and evaluation, very methodical and rigorous tests. We talked about this morning on how important it is to keep being rigorous in our testing, especially with those Airbus examples. We have typically the systems engineering V that you can apply throughout the acquisitions process that was probably belabored in test pilot school for a lot of us. And it's a very good and systematic, rigorous way to test traditional systems. However, I'll talk about later how this may not be the best way to test an autonomous system. And the reason is very similar, and we can tie it to the key components I spoke to earlier. It's difficult to test using that traditional V if your answer changes over time. So if our autonomous system is based in some sort of learning, whether it's machine learning or some other technique, it will inherently change over time. And then that can make it difficult for us to do our flight tests or tests in general. Another problem has to do with the complexity of that system, the vastness of that solution space, or the vastness of the data that it's getting inputted. So if we can't necessarily replicate the vastness of that space, we may not be able to do the traditional system where we try to get data points across the envelope. Additionally, if it is more black box or gray box, like we spoke about earlier, we may not understand the features or the inputs that that system is keying in on for its responses. And we might not even be able to control them depending on what it is. So we may get different results when we think the same exact information is being inputted for these autonomous systems, which makes this even more difficult beyond the fact that the results are going to be vast already. In traditional tests, we make sure we go after the safety critical things. We don't accept by analysis anything that we think might be dangerous or anything that's in the corner of an envelope. But if the output of this system is vast and the solution space is very highly dimensional, it might not be possible to go to every single corner of that envelope and test those safety critical systems in a rigorous way like we do traditionally. We might not have the time. One thing I didn't even touch on here that's also going to overcomplicate this is if we include cybersecurity or human interaction, human factors, and human trust of the system. That is another, those are other things that will more will complicate the test. As the DoD, we have been trying to solve this problem for several years now. At the DoD level, the Statistical Test and Analysis Techniques Center of Excellence has had studies on how do we test autonomy and how do we go moving forward on a way forward to test autonomy. And we haven't been able to necessarily come up with any broad solutions, only a more narrowly defined problem set. Google and Uber have even had similar problems with their autonomous vehicles. They hired RAND to do a study a few years ago on helping them narrow down how to rigorously test these systems, and the solutions, what the result wasn't one big solution on this is how you should do it. So if we have testers who have been looking at this for years who haven't been able to come up with a big solution, and then on the other side, experts in autonomy who are software engineers, computer scientists working at these tech firms haven't been able to come up with a solution, how do we expect to solve it with the expertise we have at hand? And that's where our proposal comes in. We propose that we have these test experts and these autonomy experts, and we need to cross-pollinate more so than just all sitting in a room together. Captain spoke earlier about the issues with communication necessarily with people who are data scientists or computer scientists or these autonomy experts. They might not know how to communicate effectively to other communities. So our proposal is we need to create someone who's smart in both. Whether we take test pilot school graduates and educate them in autonomy or some related education, whether it's computer science or computational science or statistics, or we take people who already have that education and we teach them test, whether it's through test pilot school or some other abbreviated program. Our current proposal has a PhD specifically because at the master's level, most of these types of fields teach tool sets and not the theory, not the why behind these systems and how they function. And we really need to understand the why if we want to understand how to test it effectively. After we educate these subject matter experts, we need to make sure that they have the independence and the authority to create the guidance that we're hoping to achieve. One way to do that is to put them in a high-level office, either at the Air Force or DoD level, similar to how AFWERX and DIU works now, where they have the independence to research and come up with this guidance. It also gives them the advantage that they have the reach across the test enterprise to gather information and to educate as they make progress. And it would give them the authority to start dictating the guidance that they eventually develop. Once we do achieve guidance, the next step would be to make sure that the squadrons, the test squadrons, or the tactical level of our test organization has the understanding to execute that guidance. And that might mean, as we build more SMEs, putting them into the test units themselves to make sure that they can implement what will probably be a very complex and nuanced methodology. One reason to do that is, at least in, probably all of us have had experience where we've seen people try to implement some sort of technique or policy in well-meaning, thinking they understand it, but they don't, and there are fundamental nuances or assumptions that they are violating, and they don't actually implement what they think they are implementing, and you end up getting bad results. Now, there are a lot of counter arguments to this system, and here is where I'd want a lot of feedback and discussion, because this is a thought in development and a proposal that's pretty new. So it takes a lot of time to make a test pilot school graduate or a test expert. And it takes a lot of time to make an autonomy expert. PhDs don't happen overnight. They're not 100% successful. But this is a really complex issue. We've been looking at it as individuals for years now and haven't really made more than incremental progress in how to solve it. So though it takes a lot of time, I've been struggling to find a way to shorten that time without taking out value. Next is specifically PhDs are expensive, long, not always successful. However, as I mentioned earlier, in these types of sciences, a master's typically doesn't give you the theory and the why behind how autonomy works. It gives you a set of tools. So one alternative would be if we can find a shorter schooling that exists to give them the why, but then we might lose some potential research we can get early on in the pipeline from a dissertation that we might not get in a shorter program that's not as research-centric. The third issue would be talent management, similar to what we talk about with the unicorns of data science. However, if we can solve this talent management problem, we could probably solve the pilot talent management problem too. So, and then of course there's no guarantees of success. We could put all this effort in, get all of these smart PhDs, and they might never come up with a methodology. But it's not a zero-sum solution. They will make progress in their research in school, and they may, and most likely will, make incremental progress towards solving the problem. So just because we don't succeed in solving the ultimate problem we want to solve doesn't mean we won't get goodness out of this cadre. For a way forward for now would be to establish a forum to best communicate future research, something very similar to what we're doing now, but maybe more tailored. To encourage the test community to educate themselves in the basics of autonomy, which I know there is a huge push now. DAU now even has short courses on how to test autonomy, or at least define the problems and give people the language, the vocabulary they need. And then encourage the autonomy community to care about tests. A lot of software engineers, computer scientists focus only on V&V. And focus on it so much that they think it's good enough to field a system. But we know as testers that lab results don't always scale to the real world. And especially when our system has that self-aware component or the complex inputs, you can't necessarily replicate it in any other way than in tests. And lastly is work with industry on solutions. IEEE has just started a testing autonomy conference. They've had one meeting so far, and it's mostly software engineers focusing on V&V, but if we make an effort to work with that type of community, there could be a lot of goodness now before we get to a big picture methodology. For future work, we can try to narrow down that education requirement is there a more happy medium between PhD and something else? And then seek buy-in from decision makers to start this process of making a cadre who are better equipped to solve the problem than we have been thus far. And then establish best practices as a test community, as a stopgap. Like I said, there is already a conference on testing autonomy, and we have organizations that are actively looking into testing autonomy in the Air Force and across DOD. So if we can establish best practices in the broader picture and communicate them across, that will help as a stopgap until we have a more broad methodology. And then lastly, seek out case studies in related fields like AI and computer engineering and other test organizations, and see how they can translate to these autonomy related problems. And then that's all I have, and I'm open for questions. So from my research right now, I know MIT has a computational sciences interdisciplinary program that focuses a lot in aerospace as well as other parts of autonomy, machine learning, et cetera. University of Maryland also has an interdisciplinary program in computational sciences. And then there's a lot of organizations that have data science PhD programs. And as we spoke about earlier, data science is very broad. You can easily include autonomy in there. NYU is an example. Reno, Nevada also has a program, and they're growing. Yeah, that's going to be the biggest issue, especially with the non-already native to the Air Force talent. If we want to take the talent from outside, it's exactly that. Pay is a bigger thing, too. How do we pay these people enough? How do we compete with Google? How do we compete with Uber and Tesla to pay these people? And how do we entice them to go to flight test that sounds a little more archaic to them, potentially, than driverless cars? Yes. So the question was, should we be focusing on contractors instead of government talent? And that's a good component as well. The biggest picture is the big picture testing that we run in the government. Yes, we supplement with contractors in our test squadrons, and that may be the solution, is to have more contractors embedded in the squadrons. It is important to make sure that we can do these big test events that we're going to have to do. And that may be one way to do it. The problem might be similar to the other talent management. How do we afford these contractors that are going to be specialized in test and autonomy the same way as how do we retain these other people? But that may be another avenue to supersede or to avoid the Air Force talent, the Air Force personnel system, like was mentioned earlier. So I'm not familiar with, what do you say, the Institute for Human? Okay. So I'm not familiar with them. They probably are. We do actually have squadrons in the Air Force that are looking at this. AFRL is looking at this. People at Edwards, MIT just got a bunch of money to start looking at this. Like I said, we've been looking at these things for years, and we've been making incremental progress, but we haven't made the leap we need to solve the problem. We have plenty of time if there are more questions. So you're right. The biggest limitation I've seen already, just in looking at statistics and DOE and tests that would be very similar for this type of team, is I've seen it where there are statisticians who are smart in DOE and tests who do not understand how airplanes work, who are trying to dictate how we're going to test a bomber. And there is a language breakdown in there because of that, because no one else in the room understands the statistics and the assumptions that go into these complicated methods they're trying to propose, and they don't understand necessarily the operational context or even the simple physics and aerodynamics of the system. So that's where, that would be the ideal quick solution, but from what I've seen, there's that potential that there's gonna be a breakdown really fast, and then we're not actually achieving what we think we are.
Thank you.